This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Crossed Up. Anthony Sanfilippo's here. I'm Bob Wankel, and we are less than a week away, finally, from the start of Philadelphia Phillies 2024 regular season. We're going to get Zach Wheeler. We're going to get Spencer Strider. And Anthony, like, that kind of gets me juiced up. You've been listening to us the last couple of weeks. I keep coming on here and going, this has been a long, long, long time down in Clearwater. Can we just get to the starting line? And getting that matchup, and it's such a high-profile matchup, arguably the National League's two best starting pitchers. I mean, that might be – I think that's realistic. We're in the ballpark there. Getting these two guys head-to-head game one is going to be awesome.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's funny, Bob. You know, a lot of people have been talking about how spring training is too long. Also, we're starting to hear this. Spring training is too long. It's way too long. And it's funny because I think back about it. This is the first real spring training we've had since pre-pandemic. And you think about it. So 2020 was the pandemic, right? Like, it got cut off and then they started again, whatever. It was weird. 21, there was a delay to the start because of COVID, right? 22 was the lockout, right? They weren't ready to start. So it was kind of a weird spring training year that year. Last year was all broken up by the World Baseball Classic. So you had so this is the first real spring training since before the pandemic. And so everybody thinks it's, oh my God, it's so long. And it feels long because, you know, we've been talking about it for 7 weeks. But at the same time, for these players, like, this has got to be a breath of fresh air that it's finally a return to normalcy in a sense. And so I think that plus the anticipation of it being a big season for the Phillies, like, just get us to opening day, just get us to opening day, is why we've been a little bit more antsy about it. But yeah, next Thursday is going to be, it's going to be as close to a playoff atmosphere for an April baseball game as you'll find in baseball. I don't know if there's another matchup scheduled for next Thursday in baseball that will have as many eyeballs on it as Braves Phillies.
I absolutely agree. Certainly there is a feeling like that this year the Phillies should reach the playoffs, can compete for a division title. And listen, there are a lot of things that we can get into today, and I want to get into. We need to go back out to center field and talk about Johan Rojas, and we need to talk about what we've seen or not seeing from Taijuan Walker. Like, there are things to sort of wrap up here down in Florida, but I do want to quickly sort of look ahead and talk a little bit about this season and get into the regular season finally. And JT Realmuto said it this week. Rob Thompson's been asked about it. Kyle Schwarber's been asked about it. And it's, hey, the regular season, does it matter more? Is it time for you guys to take a step forward and win this division? It's something that you and I have sort of talked about a little bit here. You want to see the Phillies compete. And I think for me, they've proven that they don't need to win the division, and that is all fine and well. But I still kind of just go back to this idea that it would be a hell of a lot nicer if they did. And I know that it can disrupt your rhythm. I know you can get put on ice. You can let another team come in with momentum. I hear all of it. We watched it unfold the last couple of years with Atlanta. I still would rather win a division and put myself in the best possible situation entering the postseason.
I'll agree with you too on part of it. And that is that I think if you win the division, if you come out here and win this division, not only have you proven the last 2 years that you can beat the Braves in the playoffs, but now you're proving that you could beat the Braves in 162 games. And it really puts a little bit of doubt in that Atlanta head, right? I mean, they're coming out like, oh, we got to get back at the Phillies. We got to get back at the Phillies. And like, that's a big thing for them. But then if you come out and beat them in the division, that gives you just another little bit of psychological leverage over that team. That said, I don't feel like it's a mandatory thing. It would be nice. I agree with you. It would be nice, but I don't want them. I just don't want it to be like it's been the last 2 years where they're out of it in May and we're like talking right about the wild card.
I agree. Right. I don't think it's mandatory that they win the division. I'd like to see them do it, obviously, right. But I think it's mandatory to compete for the division. Yes. Like at some point, I'm sorry, like I'm willing to lay the odds that you can't get your doors blown off in a division race three consecutive years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's almost like the guy gambling. Like I gotta be right sometime. I will go back to the well on this one. Like you can't keep getting your doors blown off and expect to replicate that formula of, yes, you were 15 games better than us, but man, we're the team with the balls. We're the team with the moxie. We're going to show you, like, and I wouldn't put it past them to do it again, but like, yeah, show me a little bit more. Don't concede it the sixth or seventh week of the season this time.
Yeah. That's the one thing I want to see different. Like I don't want to go through the same rigmarole where April's mediocre, May they fall apart, and then, oh, okay, we flipped to June. Now we can play baseball. Cause that's 2 months of aggravation that we don't need. Right. I mean, that really is ultimately what it comes down to. So that's where I agree with you. It has to be competitive from day one. And that's why I think it's really important that you get off to a good start, like against the Braves. And I think that it's important that you have your best 26 in those games. Although I'm not convinced that that's going to be the case, but I think it's, you know, it's what you want for that series.
All right, that's a good segue here. We're going to talk about next week, the, you know, predictions, team MVP, what's going to go right, what's going to surprise you both good and bad, how we see this whole thing shaking out. We're going to do all of the season preview stuff next week. Today, though, we do have to tie up some loose ends here. And so you talk about going north with your best 26 players. I guess this conversation has to start with and stop with two different red flags right now. And,
yep,
and one is in center field and Johan Rojas and what's happening out there and his lack of production at the plate this spring. And then the other comes in the, I guess, number four spot of the starting rotation in Taijuan Walker, who was a disaster against the Orioles the other night. And there's some nuance to this stuff. There's some details. It's not just look at the box score or look at the overall stat lines and, you know, make a conclusion, but it hasn't been great for either of these guys. And these were really the two players coming in. If we would have, if you rewind and go back 6-7 weeks ago, you say, like, who are you looking at? Who do you need to see have a decent spring to make you feel better? I think these two guys are at the top of the list, and nothing that has transpired here has really evoked any confidence at this point.
No, it hasn't. And I'm starting to worry that they're going to bring both these guys north and it's going to come back and bite them a little bit. Look, there's no doubt that you can bat Johan Rojas ninth in your lineup, rely on the other eight guys to be your offensive guys. And he makes up for what he lacks in offense with his tremendous defense in center field. There's no doubting that. There's no questioning that. That's fine. The reality of it is, though, is that he needs to be able to get on base more than what he has in the spring. Now, they've told him in spring, don't worry about the numbers. So part of that has to be that. We can't sit here and just look at the numbers and say, he's been awful, this guy shouldn't be starting in center field. They look at it a little bit more, with a little bit more detail. They're seeing improvement in his approach and the way he's swinging the bat, using the lower half, trying to get it synced up. Kevin Long he said in a couple interviews, he has seen that. And I don't think he's lying to everybody. I don't think he's just blowing smoke just because, oh, well, we're going to bring him up there, so we want you to think we're seeing something that you're not, right? Like, I don't think that that's what they're doing. I think that they're being honest about it. But I also think Dave Dombrowski and Rob Thompson have been honest about it as well in saying that we have to do what's best for the player. And usually when you hear somebody say that, an executive say, we have to do what's best for the player, they're usually saying they need a little bit more time in the minors. We will bring this guy back, but we need to get him right. And we don't want it to hurt us to start the season. So I'm at a 50-50 right now, Bob. I'm not certain. Like a couple weeks ago when we were talking about this, I was convinced that he wasn't making the opening day roster, right? I was convinced that I had seen enough in Florida that he was not the guy that's going to start the season. He was going to go down to the minors. They were going to start with the other guys. But then you start hearing some things in the last few days make me think maybe he is going to be on this roster. And I'm not sure that that's the right move when you want to go out and jump out to a good start, especially against Atlanta.
Yeah, so Rob Thompson recently, earlier this week, actually was talking about and said, we've asked him to make some pretty drastic changes to his swing. We've seen those improvements. It's taken some time. The results haven't quite come yet, but there's a lot of positives that we feel really good about some of the changes that he's been asked to make and his ability to adapt to them. Okay, great. That's awesome. I believe that. I think that the Phillies do a pretty good job in the way that they message things, whether it's Rob Thompson or it's Dave Dombrowski. Like, you sit down with these guys, and it's not a lot of fluff and bullshit. Like, they're not direct. They're not always going to give you every detail of the plan or always open the door to their exact line of thinking. But I think for the most part, you know, I don't want to say straight shooters, but I think that they give you a lot more insight than a lot of other executives in sports give.
Yes.
And so I think you have to at least take most of what they say at face value. So when I hear them compliment the work that Johan Rojas has done, I say, okay, like, great. I think that there's some sincerity in those words. And that's all fine and well. But again, it's about expectation and it's about where this team's at. You know, this isn't the 2015 Phillies. This isn't the 2017 Phillies. This is 2024 Phillies. We're talking win the NL East. Go out and swing with the likes of the Dodgers and Braves. Compete for a World Series. My question to you is, if they elect to bring him north, can let me start over. If they bring him north, what exactly is the impact of that if he bats ninth and hits 180 for them and has a 220 on base percentage? Like, the idea is that he can run around and play superior defense, and it doesn't matter if he hits or not. So what if he gives you nothing offensively in center field for the first month of the season, and that way the Phillies can say, we're going to do right by the player, as you said. We gave him a chance. It didn't materialize in March. It hasn't materialized in April. Now we're going to send him down. Like, do you think that the Phillies are going to cost themselves three games by playing Johan Rojas in center field every day and letting him hit ninth and struggle? Like, is it really that big of a deal, I guess, is what I'm asking you?
No, I don't think you can cost yourself that many games that quick, right? I mean, so that's part of it, too. But I guess you look at it backwards, right? I mean, you're crossing your fingers if you put him on your roster to start the season and saying, we believe in this kid. He's going to be fine. We believe. And you expose at least one of the other guys to waivers because they're both out of options in Pache and Cave, right? And then if it doesn't work out, then, you know, what are you doing at that point? Then it's like, well, we lost a guy because we gambled on this and it didn't work. Whereas you could go the opposite direction and you can keep those guys at least until you're confident Rojas is ready, Then you could bring them back. And then if you lose one of those guys because you waive them, you're not as upset about it because you now got the guy ready to be, you know, where he's going to go. So, like, to me, that's a more rational way of going about it and thinking about it and keeps you competitive early. But at the same time, you know, maybe they value what he brings.
Yeah, but man, isn't that crazy? Like, because I think that the Phillies forever kind of operated in that fashion. It's like, we're gonna protect our options. We don't want to lose a player that we think isn't necessarily a difference maker, but somebody that can really help us and give depth. Like, and the idea is, like, you do want to say at some point, like, we always talk about spring training results don't matter. They don't matter. You can't read into them. But, like, you ask guys to make changes, and that's fine. But at some point, results have to materialize. It feels to me like they are doing everything they can to bring Johan Rojas with them opening day. And it's almost like every single sign in front of them says, this isn't the thing to do. But it's almost like, let's wait one more day. Let's wait one more day. Maybe it clicks today. To me, though, it's almost like, I know you have to keep your options open and you can't go out and actually, like, make the transaction 7 days ago, but it's almost like, isn't this a young player who's sort of trying to find his way right now with a lot of eyeballs on him? And, like, it's almost like if you were going to bring him north and the results truly don't matter. I feel like earlier this week, and maybe this happened, but I feel like earlier this week, somebody should have tapped him on the shoulder and been like, you're on the team, you know, like, put an end to it. Like, give them that vote of confidence and let's go do this thing for 30 days and see how it goes.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the one thing, though, that they did, the one transaction that they did make 7 days ago, I think it was 7 days at this point, that maybe gives you a little bit more of a hint that they're going to do exactly what you just said and come north with Rojas, is they signed Jordan Luplow off of waivers from the Braves and signed him to a minor league contract. And that's important because this is a veteran player who's been around the majors, who signed a minor league deal. So you don't have to worry about losing him, right? So he goes to the – he's the right – basically, he's the right-handed version of Jake Cave in a lot of ways. Plays the same positions, plays some first base, similar type player, just right-handed. And what that does is having him and then, of course, David Dahl, who they signed to a minor league deal before the – or early in spring training – having those guys available maybe makes it more palatable to lose either Cave or Pache if another team were to claim them if you try to pass them through waivers. So that's that move of adding Luplo. I remember texting you, and the only thing I got is he's the guy that gave up the home run to Rojas when he was impersonating Craig Kimbrell, right? That was the only thing you had on him. But really, that move might be indicative of the fact that they're willing to lose either Pache or Cave just to bring Rojas north.
All right. Well, the other thing that we have to look at, and by the way, I do want to say, I think it's a good spot to be in that, this is what we're talking about right now. Obviously, you want to have center field figured out. But I think that part of the reason that this doesn't feel like the end of the world is because you like so much what's around this lineup and up and down it that, okay, if this doesn't work out, it probably shouldn't be a deal breaker for this team. The other thing here, though, now is you go into the starting rotation, and I think that there's a lot to feel good about here. We've talked a little bit about this already. Zach Wheeler, we're all expecting to, again, maintain that Cy Young level of production, and we think that there's every reason to believe that'll happen again. I expect Aaron Nola to be better than he was a season ago. We can get into why and all of that maybe next week, but again, I feel pretty confident about where he's at right now. Some of the adjustments that he was able to make, I think both mentally and then from a mechanics standpoint as the year progressed last season. Ranger Suarez finally has a full spring. Seems to be on track. He's been great. Everyone feels awesome about him. Awesome. Great. Good stuff. I think that right now all signs kind of have been pretty optimistic and positive around Christopher Sanchez. I know it's a little bit of a wild card, a little bit of an unknown, but there's really no reason to feel like that he's going to take some monster step backward right now. That brings us to Taijuan Walker. So go ahead, Anthony. Give me your initial thoughts on Taijuan Walker right now.
He's a guy who every time you talk to him, you feel like he's blowing smoke at you. Oh, yeah, I feel great. Oh, everything's fine. Yeah, I'm expecting it to be my velocity to be down. That's no worries. We'll get there. Working hard. And I'm like, I feel like you've been saying this since last year. And, he gets lit up in the first inning of a spring training game against the Orioles. They have to pull him after 31 pitches. And he goes, in spring training, you're allowed to go back out there again. So he goes back out and he gets hit up, for more the second time out. And Rob Thompson is asked by, he's like, yeah, well, we got to figure out that first inning problem. No shit, Rob. No shit. You have to figure that out now. It was a problem last year. Why are you having to figure it out a week before the season? To me, this is the most unbelievable thing that they let go to this.
Is this a good time to mention the first inning numbers last year? 31 games.
Go ahead.
31 games, 24 earned runs allowed in the first inning. That was by far the most amount of earned runs he allowed in any inning last year. 7.04 ERA. Opponents hit .310 against him with an 888 OPS in the first inning. To be fair, he actually probably should have survived that first inning without some of the damage taking place. But listen, I know that they misplayed a couple balls in the infield. That's all fine and well, but you're looking at velocity. You're looking about the effectiveness of the pitches. It's not like he got dinked and dunked to death on his way to giving up 4 or 5 runs. Those balls were squared up. I mean, it was pus, right? So, here's the deal. I was listening to the morning show, WIP morning show today, and I guess somebody had called in and said, Taijuan Walker kind of seems disingenuous. He seems not a great teammate. He just doesn't seem to fit the Phillies clubhouse. And Ruben Amaro had heard the exchange. He wasn't in on the show, but he sent a text message out to Joe DeCamera, and he said, you can read this too. He says, Taijuan Walker's a great teammate.
Yeah.
And that he works his butt off. And you're talking about a guy that's had some success here at the major league level. This isn't some, total scrub that has never been productive. There's a reason he got the contract that he got. And even last year, he doesn't pitch in October. But, if you just straight up right now replicated Taijuan Walker's 23 season into 24, I think, you probably would take that. I know the wins and losses really skew the whole thing.
Even still, like, I would take his ERA. I'd take his whiff. If that's my number five starter.
Right.
Yeah, I'm taking it every day of the week.
But it is interesting, right? Because, like you said, it's almost like he kind of is like, there's like this like sense of blowing smoke. And we talked about it before. Like, I had heard that there were, not that it was like some injury that prevented him from performing last year, but that he was just like battling some different like nagging things. And like, true or not, I don't know. But again, like, there always feels like there's like a, I don't want to use the word excuse because I don't think it's an excuse, but I always feel like there's like some, well, you have to understand the full context in order to really know what's going on here. And I guess that's not different than any situation, but it just always feels like there's like an explanation or a, well, this is why. The bottom line is he's out there. He's I think between, he was 88 to 90 his first time out. I think the other night he was like 89, maxed out at 93.
I don't think he got it. Did he get to 93?
Yeah, I think he topped at 93 once. But there was a lot of like 90, 91, 89. I don't know, man. Like 2 2/3 the other night. I think he gave up 7 hits. He had 3 walks. Like, he just wasn't sharp. And maybe he's a veteran guy that can kind of turn it on quickly and find a way to figure it out here in the next couple weeks. But I don't feel great about it. I will say that. And yeah. I think that in addition, it's not like there's an obvious solution that, well, if this does not work, they're going to have this guy waiting in the wings to come in and do it. Like, I don't feel great about 1 2 3. I feel great about 1 2 3, but I don't feel great about the entire thing. If it becomes, pray to God that Christopher Sanchez is legit, doesn't take a big step back, which again, I don't think he will. And then piecing together your number five, which I know a lot of teams across baseball do this, but like, again, if it's about winning 95 games, beating the Braves, showing that you're truly elite, you know, doing this, Taijuan Walker gives up 4 in the first, but he battles his way through 5 and only gives up 5. Like, that's not it, man.
Yeah. So just to confirm what Ruben said in that text message, Walker is very well liked in that locker room.
Yeah.
He's a good teammate. He's always, every time I'm in there, he's talking to a different guy. He's hanging out with different guys. Like, I don't want anybody to think that he's not a good fit for the Phillies in that regard. But if I said to you, Bob, without putting the name Taijuan Walker on it and without the contract that he got, if I told you the Phillies were going to get 30 starts and 170 innings out of a number five pitcher with a 4.3 ERA and a whip around 1.3, you'd say, I'm in.
Yeah, man.
So it's right. So like, the thing of it is that we get more critical because it's a veteran player who signed a contract that's paying him $72 million over 4 years, right? $18 million a year. And he's expected to be a little bit better than he's been. And well, so I think that's why we get so caught up in it. And deservedly so. Like, I have concerns about Taijuan Walker too. But at the same time, if it was Joe Schmo putting up those numbers and he's your fifth starter, everybody's cool with it. Everybody's like, yeah, man, that's pretty good for a contending team.
Well, I think it's also like sort of maybe a bit unfair to Taijuan Walker, this like microscope that's being put on him.
Yeah.
But I think it's also a kind of a testament to where the Phillies are at and what they've sort of built here, in that the expectations are so great. And in that a lot of these guys, like, people really like them. They, you know, they're either really talented players or productive players. They forged a connection with the city. Like, there's so many of these guys on this team. He's one of these guys that really hasn't done that yet. And yeah. I think that that's like a little bit part of it as well. Like, and he is a good guy and he is liked in that clubhouse. And there really isn't any reason. It's funny. Like, it's strange to me that he's become this like guy that it's like, well, does he really fit into what they do? And I just think it's the urgency with which fans are sort of approaching this season that has amplified these questions around him.
Well, no, I think you're spot on with that. And that's part of it. Right. And look, that's part of what we do. And we're going to break down every player. And, you know, if a guy is struggling, we're going to say he's struggling. And it's not you shouldn't take that as, oh, this, you know, we don't like the guy, because the guy's fine. I mean, like, I have zero problem with him. He was open with me, you know, a couple weeks ago when I wrote that first story before everybody else jumped on it, right? Like, he was open with me about his recovering from the knee thing, and you know how, you know, he felt like he was a little bit behind, but he would get there. Just had to build up to five innings, which I didn't love that quote, right? Like, I mean, like, so yeah. I'm just doing what I have to do, do the bare minimum. Don't try to go beyond. But whatever. I mean, the guy was honest and open about it. You can't complain about that. I mean, that's something that the city of Philadelphia loves from their athletes. They want that transparency. They want that honesty, and they want to know that you're working hard. That's all that they really care about. And then if you perform within that, they're going to support you forever. It just seems like we're in a vicious cycle with him where we have this expectation that he needs to be better than he is, and he probably should be, but he may not get there, and he's going to just be this. And then we have to decide, are we comfortable enough with this as your guy, right, as part of your rotation? And if you are, then you'll enjoy Taiwan Walker as part of your team. If you're not, then you're going to demand for somebody else to be in his spot.
Yeah, and one more thought here. I'm trying to think about like where the fan comes from when they're assessing Taiwan Walker. And I do think that there's part of it where he wasn't thrilled last October, and nor should he be. Anybody that's a competitor, that's a professional athlete, that's getting paid that money, like, you want that guy to be upset that he wasn't afforded the opportunity to go out and do it. Whether or not he deserved it is an entirely different story. Like, there's got to be part of him that's like, veteran guy, like, pay me a lot of money. I want to contribute. I'm frustrated that I'm not contributing. That being said, like, then the season ends and we're getting pictures on Twitter from his weight room and pictures of dumbbells, and it's all right. And then, you know, he's behind schedule this spring for a variety of reasons. Like, maybe he can't help that he had a little bit of a, you know, a nagging injury in March. And there were some personal things, and I don't know what they were, and I'm sure that they needed to be attended to. Like, that's not on him, but like, or me, you know, I don't know if it's on him. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But the question is just like, all right, man, like, We saw all that last fall. Like, come do it. And so when you get the quotes, like, I'm building up the five innings, and you see this production, and you see 91, you're like, all right, like, okay, I guess we'll see. So that kind of, I think, sort of helps maybe complete the picture of why people are maybe a little bit more dialed in on him than maybe they need to be. But I think this is a really good team. You're obviously going to focus on the flaws of it, the things that concern you about it, and fortunately, right now, and we'll see where we're at 2 weeks from now, the list of, like, I'm real concerned about this thing, it's pretty short right now.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess the only question I think that remains with him is, will he be ready to go for what his first start is against Cincinnati after the Braves series?
Right.
And I'm not certain that he is, Bob. He's only pitched in two games in spring training. He'll have one more, which I believe is the last spring training game.
Yeah.
But even then, like, he hasn't thrown more than three innings in a game. Like, are you comfortable saying, all right, well, we'll just let him throw four innings against Cincinnati? And
well, I don't know. I mean, can you get there? Like, he was at what the other night? He threw 61 total pitches. Is that right?
Yeah, he did. They left him out to dry a little bit, but yeah, yes.
Next start, you ramp pitches up. Maybe you get into the 70s, and then he makes his first start on an 80-pitch limit, and you hope you get four or five out of him. I think it's not unreasonable to go down that road. No doubt he's behind schedule, and no doubt that is less or far from an ideal situation. But, like, yeah, can you maybe choke a four-inning start out of the guy? Yeah, I think so, maybe.
Or do you – there are off days, right?
Can you manipulate the off days to give him, you know, one turn through and let him throw a simulated game and then let him rip?
Right, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, I think that's a possibility. So
yeah, so that's something to keep an eye on here. So. Yeah. Okay, that kind of gets us through, I guess, the two main things that everybody's talking about here. One other thought that I have kind of coming into this, and I want to keep this kind of short today. We still have to do, one last thing. I just want to kind of get your read on this. We talked last season about the Phillies, and had they won the World Series, they might have gone down as like one of the most, you know, beloved teams ever in the city's history. And they obviously failed to do that. And there was a lot of anger and a lot of frustration from the fan base about this team, the way things ended last year. And I, at the time, said that, and, you know, I personally wasn't angry. I was sort of disappointed. I thought they should have won that series. Certainly. I kind of described it as a choke job. And I think I said that as someone that is very, very, cognizant of the fact that baseball is random and that anything can happen in a two-night span, knowing that. But the reason why I sort of landed on that was that, you know, look at the approaches in that game. Like, they were panic approaches. So it's not like, oh, well, you know, they're spraying the ball all over the field. Shit happens. Or, you know, like somebody made a good pitch at a good time and they, you know, they blooped one over Bryson Stott's head and they won the game by a run. Like, I thought the Phillies looked panicked in both of those games with an opportunity to go to the World Series. And, you know, you call it a choke job, call it kind of succumbing to the pressure of the moment, whatever it was. Like, I was surprised because that team, to me, like, it was so uncharacteristic of them, because what we know about this team is that they sort of rise to the occasion. They obviously have home field advantage and just everything pointing in that, in their direction. And for it to fall apart the way it did, it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around it. So there were some bad feelings, I think, at the end of last season. I think for the most part, despite the fact that they've done absolutely nothing other than retain Aaron Nola and add Whit Merrifield, which I don't want to say is, you know, inconsequential, it seems like most of that has been forgotten already. You know, like,
well, yeah, I don't think it's, I'll put it this way. I don't think it's forgotten, but forgiven? I think it's forgiven.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And that I think that's fair.
Forgotten. Yeah. Maybe forgotten's a stretch, but forgiven.
Because if it rears its ugly head again, then this town's going to be very, very pissed off.
So I actually was going to take this two different ways. We'll stop in negative town first, I guess. This team starts like, well, like, I feel like the goodwill is back. Like, it just, it's back like it never left. It's like, how much leash does this team have the first couple weeks of the season before it's like, what the fuck? Here we go again. What, these guys in April, like, how are the fans going to take these first few weeks if the Phillies don't come out ripping from the jump?
Yeah, I mean, again, they don't have to be, you know, dominant, but at the same time, they have to be better than 500. If you're just a mediocre team in the first month, 2 months of the season, then, yeah, then people are going to start remembering, oh, by the way, you blew it last year against Arizona. Let's not have that happen. And people will talk about it again, right? I mean, that's the path of this journey that you know, during the down times of the season, fans are going to remember, hey, don't forget, this is a group that broke our hearts last year, right? You know, so, but when the season's going well, when the team's winning games, they're going to be right back on board. So it's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster, I think, emotionally with the Phillies all season long. And that's fine. And that, to me, that's a good thing, because it means
you think we're going to get like a little bit of like Eagles intensity with this team.
Yes.
Where they're playing pretty good baseball, but you know, they lose 2 out of 3 to the Mets and it's like, what the hell? Like, what is this? Rob Thompson, that, what decision-making? This guy can't manage.
Yep.
You know, I think we're going to be in for one of those seasons. Like, yes. I project, here's an early prediction about this season. We're going to be talking about a Phillies team in, and I hope I'm right, we're going to be talking about a Phillies team that first week of June is somewhere between 8 to 12 games over 500, playing pretty good baseball, and they're going to have a couple bad losses. And we're going to have to get on here and be like, yo, like, that went wrong. Questionable decision. Like, you and I are going to pick things apart and talk about it, but I feel like that we're going to be taking some tone of like, everyone needs to relax, like, everyone needs to just chill out, like, this is a good team, they know what they're doing, like, it's all good. I feel like there might be some of that this year. Like, I really do think that fans are going to be like on edge a little bit. There's a lot of goodwill, I think. Yeah, and when we started having this conversation, when I started talking, you know where I was trying to get to, like, the likability factor of the team. Like, they did nothing. And I think in a way it's part of, like, it's not why this team's likable, but like, I feel like the fans are really able to, it's so unique in sports, and stop me if I'm wrong here, but I really feel like that this Phillies team is different in that, like, the consistency of the core has been together now for enough years and successful years in making these two deep playoff runs. And here they are again with big expectations. Like, it's unique to see, to me anyway, like this run of success and really be relatively unchanged in terms of who's doing it. I feel like the connection between the fan base and this team is about as strong as it can get in 2024.
1,000%. And I think that there's something great about that and unique about that. That's awesome. But it's also what could be the negative, which is what you said, like, everybody's going to panic over every little thing.
Right.
Like, it's going to be hyper anxiety about the Phillies this year. It's going
to be right up my alley. right. It's right on my eye. I just had a doctor's appointment today where, like, I was given some good news, and the guy was like, "You good, man?" And I'm like, I just, you know, I'm not, are you sure? Like, it was like one of those. Like, guy's like, "Jesus, man." You
know, that's so great. That's great. Yeah. No, but no, but that's the kind of thing. Like, it's, you have everybody bought in, and people care, and people are invested, and that's great. Right. And so then when things are good, it's going to be a fun time down at that ballpark every night because of that. Right. It's going to be reminiscent of what it was back in 08 and 09 and 10. Right. Like that same thing. It's going to be just like that every night at the ballpark. And that's a great feeling for when you're going down there. But we're also going to have moments where we're like, all right, stop panicking. It was just one loss in mid-June. Like, it's no big deal. You know, yeah, we'll talk about it in the vacuum, but let's not make it be something that needs to be bigger than it really is.
Fair enough. All right. Well, let's try to get to the finish line here. Are we going to talk about Shohei Ohtani?
Well, that's got to be one last thing, right? I mean, how can it not be one last thing today?
I heard Kevin DeGondi today ask a really interesting question to John Kincaid and Andrew Salchunas, and he just said, I have one question about all of this, because there's obviously the story about the interpreter and the story changing three times in 24 hours.
Yeah.
What bookie is allowing someone to take on a $4.5 million credit? Like, correct. And it's a great question, because, like, think the best of the situation, think the worst of the situation. I know the fact that the wire transfer is a whole different element to it. Like, that in and of itself, if executed improperly, can be a legal thing federally. Like, there's so much at play here, but just ask yourself this. What bookie is allowing someone to take out $4.5 million of credit? They're just, something's not right about this, man. And if I'm the Dodgers right now, I'm like, oh my God, like, this is not good. I hope, you know, only thing I'll say, because I don't know my ass from my elbow on this story, and I'm not going to sit here and try to, you know, take everyone to death and be like, I'm right. I'm not even a moral authority. Like, my entire business is tied up in sports betting. Like, that's how I make a living, is promoting these legal sports betting apps. But, like, this isn't good. There's nothing good about this story. And I hope it doesn't go away. I really hope, and I don't think it will. Like, I don't think this is one that's going to get swept under the rug. Like, I hope that the Jeff Passans of the world, and I forget her name, who broke the story for ESPN and who's been doing the reporting. Yeah. She's done a great job, and I'm remiss that I don't have her name to you know, give that proper shout out here. But, like,
Tisha Thompson.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Really good stuff. Like, I hope they keep grinding away on it, because, like, this thing, they got to get to the bottom of this, and they got to figure out what the hell happened, man.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I was going to say the same thing. Like, there is no bookie on earth who would give that line of credit to a regular guy. Like,
yeah, what's your job? Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, you might get, like, that guy might get a little bit more than the average Joe, because where, you know, who he is and where he works, right? Okay, we'll give you a little, but you're not getting $4.5 million.
Yeah, was Diego getting a $4.5 million credit limit last year? Like, I don't think so. You know, right. I don't think so.
That's the thing. And I'll tell you something else. As someone who many years ago, one time in my life, had to do a wire transfer, right? I think that the transfer at the time was like $2,000.
It's hard to do a wire transfer.
It's like the vetting that has to get done to make a wire transfer happen. There's, in my mind, I don't know how it's conceivable that the person who has the bank account that money is coming out of is not involved and knowing where the money is going and what it's for, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it blows my mind that could even be suggested.
And the worst thing you can do is look at circumstantial evidence and, you know, use it to condemn somebody. I don't think that's fair, generally speaking, but when you look at the details that are still emerging of this story, and then you see the body language and communication between Ohtani and the interpreter on Wednesday morning, you're like, this is kind of already out there. Like, they know the details of this story are starting to come out. Like, this does not look like a guy that's angry about someone stealing $4.5 million from him potentially. Like, it just doesn't look good. It doesn't add up. And without being accusatory, I would just say, like, it doesn't look like a good story, man. And I don't know what's going to happen. I guess without any more like really hard factual damning detail, like I'd say like it still feels to me like a long shot that Shohei Ohtani is going to be suspended for a year. But like, man, like this does not look to me like a nothing to see here type of story.
Yeah, baseball isn't going to be able to sweep this one under the rug.
Yeah.
So hell of a start for the Dodgers, huh? Because Yamamoto had his first start too, and how'd that go?
Are we willing to chalk that up to it was one inning and one start and don't sweat that too much? I mean, everyone in baseball drooled all over this guy, and Phillies wanted him hard, and we can't – there's no world in which all the scouting was that far off, right?
No, I mean, I don't think so. But
I mean, again, he struggled with his first spring start and then kind of figured things out. I just wouldn't put too much into it. But what you're right, man. You're absolutely right. Hell of a start for the Dodgers here, two games in.
Couldn't happen to a better team. The only team I would laugh more at would be the Mets if that happened to the Mets.
Yeah. I wonder what the Angels are thinking right now. Like, I know. All right. Yeah.
The Angels are like, woo, got off that. You don't have to worry about that now, right?
Well, there you go.
Although that some of that stuff took place while he was with the Angels.
Yeah,
so.
I'm sure that they're going to have some inquiries coming their way too.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Yeah. I just wouldn't want to be tied to that contract at the moment. Maybe it's all good, and we'll all kind of look at this and say like, oh, all right, wasn't him, but I don't know, man.
Unreal.
All right. Well, that will do it for the latest episode of Crossed Up. Anthony and I will be back on Monday. And I think we're going to go Monday, Wednesday next week, if I had to guess, ahead of the Phillies season opener against the Braves on Thursday afternoon at Citizens Bank Park. You can check us out on YouTube. You can check us out on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And we will talk to you then. See you later.